Perek Sheni, the sixth Mishnah, Hillel Omer, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. Do not separate from the Tzibur. Va'al Tamein Ba'atzma Ad Yom Ascha, and don't trust yourself until your dying day. Va'al Todin Es Chaverach Ad Tegil Mekomo, don't judge other people till you're in his place. Va'al Tomer Dovashi Efshel L'Shmoel Shesof L'Shomea, don't say things you don't want heard, because it will be heard. Va'al Tomer, don't say L'Shefnesh, now when I get around to it, then I will learn Shem Lo Tipana, because it may never happen. This is a bunch of stuff that each one deserves its own shir. So let's start with Al Tivish Min HaTzibur. Do not separate yourself from the Tzibur. Rabbeinu Yonah comments on this part of the Mishnah. When the Tzibur is engaged in a mitzvah, this is a crown to the Ribbono Shel who keser chei olamim. It's a kavod to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ki b'roiv am ne'asaf from l'kai mitzvah. When everyone gathers together to do Hashem's mitzvah, it's tremendous kavod shemayim. Hadras melech. It's a glory to the king. And therefore you shouldn't be out of the loop. You should be part of the group. Ein roi lefesh mehem. Like it says, v'hi b'shur melech b'hisasef rashi am yachad shifte Yisrael. When Klai Yisrael gathers together b'hisasef rashi am yachad shifte Yisrael, that's Hashem's glory of malchus. That's when the tzibur is going with derech teiva and they're gathering to do mitzvahs. But if the tzibur is leaning to do bad and their acts are corrupt, you should not associate with them, and if you separate from them, that is meshubach. And that another Yirmiyah says, I'd rather live in the midbar than with these people that are doing the wrong thing. So, Al Tivish Min HaTzibur is a very important concept, and you've all heard it before. And Rabbeinu Yonah's emphasis is that this happens to be a gevaldik kavod shemayim. It's tremendous kavod shemayim when people unite in big groups to do Hashem's mitzvahs. When individuals do mitzvahs, it's a wonderful thing, it's an important thing, but when everyone does it together, there's this concept that this is tremendous kavod shemayim, that when everyone does this at one time in unison, it just is, it's a unique expression of honoring Hashem. And clearly, if you participated in the Siyam HaShas this past summer at MetLife Stadium, it was palpable. You can feel it, that you're participating in a tremendous kavod shemayim. And even if you weren't there, if you were at another place that was showing it, so it was a kavod shemayim. And if someone didn't go at all, if someone had nothing to do with it, so I'm not saying they didn't have vera, but you know, one day they may have to give a cheshbon. 200,000 Jews were celebrating Siyam of Shas. Where were you? Like, what was so important that you couldn't make it? And my feeling is, even if you can't make it to the actual stadium and participate, and I will tell you, I was nervous up front about going to the stadium with my family. I have this thing about 90,000 Jews in one place, getting nervous. But in the end, we decided to go. We had a family simcha, and it just worked out that we'll be there on the East Coast. So we all went, and Baruch Hashem, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. But in the other years when I didn't go, so we were here, we would attend. And it's not just this. If they had a kinos for Citi Field about technology, and 40,000 people show up, and I didn't go to that. People, why are you going? You're going to have to go. It didn't work out for me to go, but I made sure to come here. I went here to the Young Israel had a show, and I had other things to do that night. You know, I had plenty of things to fill my schedule. But if the tzibur is getting together to do something, to mechazik themselves, to strengthen themselves, to celebrate them, these kind of things, you really want to make sure you are part of these things. It's tremendous kavod shemayim. And we don't always have these opportunities. We don't always have such an opportunity. So as we were saying before the class started, if right now there's a tzara in the East Coast with people who lost their clothes and lost their cars and lost their homes and so many things, the needs are so many, and the chesed is unbelievable, the amount of chesed that's going on in places, people providing food and providing clothes. And I just was reading an email update how they set up in a certain place racks and racks of new clothes in a covered way, come and pick up clothes. And for the people who don't have, and housing, of course, is an issue for many people, and there's a tremendous amount of chesed going on. There's tremendous costs. There's tremendous cost, and there are some government help, and there's some insurance, perhaps. But right now, they need, like now, before you fill out the paperwork. And the Rabbanim announced in Shul that this is something that we should participate in. And it's true, we have local tzedakahs and local mostos and things that we have to help on a regular basis, and we do. But every now and then, there comes an opportunity. We didn't ask for this, but now we're presented with a chesed opportunity that's unprecedented, and we have to be part of it. I just feel you have to take part, whether you give $10 or $20 or $50 or $100, whatever it is, you have to participate. So in Shul on Shabbos, we announced that the official Agudas Yisrael position is don't send the money to us, send it straight to the local organizations. And one of the big ones is called Achiezer, which is helping tremendously. So we mentioned that on Shul on Shabbos. So then after Shabbos, I'm trying to find an address for Achiezer so I could send a check to Achiezer. And when you Google Achiezer and you find Achiezer, there's no address. There's donate here button that you click on, and literally within 2 minutes you make your donation as if you're buying an airline ticket. You put about the money you want to give, your name, your address, all the relevant numbers. 2 minutes later you have your receipt. And on Sunday when I spoke in shul, I told people this is the modern way of giving tzedakah. It's to forget the envelope, forget the stamps, get in the post office. You have your computer. If someone doesn't have a computer and you don't have internet access, then okay, you'll have to ask someone who does to help you if you want to do it like this. And I imagine there is some kind of address you can mail to, but it was not, I couldn't find it easily, and there's no reason to do it. If you can give it a dub with your credit card on the computer, so that's an immediate way to help out. And to me, that's part of Altifish Menasiba. But when everyone is involved in something like that, you want to participate. It doesn't have to be big. It's within your means, but it shouldn't be that everyone's doing this and you're not. You should also be doing it. You should also be part of it. And this is any time it's things that are proper and good. Now, sometimes there are things that are questionable. It's very rare that, you know, something is obviously wrong. And come on, everyone's doing it. Altifish Menasiba, you know, if it's obviously wrong, it's obviously wrong. The problem is when things are great, and you're not sure, am I supposed to participate, am I not supposed to participate? You're a shayla's. Sometimes you have to ask a shayla, am I supposed to go to this event, am I supposed to go to this event? And there are all kinds of fundraisers for organizations, and you start wondering, am I supposed to give to this organization? Not, it's not a yeshiva, it's not help, whatever it is. I don't want to be specific, but there are things that sometimes you can question, is this where I should be giving my mice and money to? And these are legitimate shaylas. There was a speech given by Moshe Feinstein many years ago that was later printed up, where he says, he was the Pesach of his generation, and still to this day we live on the things he said. And he said, it's very fascinating. People come with all kinds of shaylas to me, but the two most important shaylas to ask, they don't ask. That decide on their own. They all of a sudden become their own poskim to answer. The two most important shaylas that a person can ever ask are, A, where do I send my children to school? And B, where should I send my tzedakah money? Says these are two things everyone thinks they can pass for themselves. And in his mind, those are the most important shaylos a person will ever ask. It's important to know about your milchik spoon and the achont of the blach. These are good shaylos. But the most important shaylos, where to give your tzedakah and where to send your children to school. The idea of where to give tzedakah, Rav I know spoke about this, and the next week a person made an appointment and came with a shoebox full of envelopes from all these tzedakah places that they mail him in the mail. Who do I give to? And he goes to 100 pieces of mail to determine which are the worthy causes and which are not as worthy. It's certainly a shout. Some people will send a check to every piece of mail they get, and I don't think that's the right way to go about it either. But ultimately, these are things a person can ask. A person can ask, where should I send it? Is this the right place to send it? And a lot of people ask how to distribute them. So, these are legitimate, important questions to be resolved. But getting to back, Altivish Menat Sibur, the aside is a person should not be out of the loop. Now, you may ask, okay, it's a big covered Shemayim when everyone does a mitzvah together. That's true. But can a person, like, we're diverse, we're all different, we have different techunos, different leanings, and why should someone else decide for me where I should send my stock of money? I personally like a certain cause, this is meaningful to me, and can I decide that for myself? Altivish Menat Sibur could almost become mob rule. Like, why do I have to follow the mob? Can I be an individual? Can I be my own person? And the truth is, there's a lot of room to be your own person, and there's a lot of room for individuality, and there's no question there are certain tzedakas that are nearer and dearer to some people than to other, and for whatever reason, they'll feel more inclined to distribute there, and I think that has to be respected. But the flip side of it is, in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we really are better off being part of a crowd. We really don't want to be singled out. We don't want to be scrutinized. The whole concept of tefillah b'tzibur, don't daven by yourself. You want to daven, kavaldik. Do it with a group. Why should you with a group? I'm talking to God. I have to talk with everyone else. Why can't I be on my own? My own self-expression. I used to go to the woods and meditate and do my own thing. Why do I have to go to shul? Why do I have to be part of a tzibur? What's wrong with talking to God one-on-one, my own thing? And the Svarim teach us, the Gemara kind of says it, that it's very nice as an ideal to have a one-on-one with God, but who do you think you are, so to speak, that you're going to get a one-on-one? Who do you think you are that your tefillah will get to where it's supposed to go? You think you're so special? Oh, let's take a look. The malachim will start to scrutinize. You want an individual, it's called yechidus. You want to be alone. Okay, do you deserve it? Let's check your record lately. Let's open up the files. No one wants that. No one wants to have their record scrutinized. No one wants to be put under the microscope and see what level am I really on. So the Gemara says, you want to avoid that? Daven with the tzibur. When the tzibur davens, your tefillah goes to Shemayim with everyone else's tefillah as a package. And the individual is not scrutinized. And the Gemara says, your tefillah will be accepted. If you daven the tzibur, your tefillah is going to be accepted. You daven yechidus, no guarantee. Davening onyagin. Now, great tzaddikim, they could do it. Great tzaddikim could go in the woods and they'll daven, and Hashem, they'll get the VIP lane, their tefillahs go right where it's supposed to go. But the rest of us, no guarantees. No guarantees. So we're taught that we really are better off being part of the crowd or almost lost in the crowd. Now again, Ribbono Shel Olam knows each and every one of us and has our tefillahs, and we have our files, and so to speak. Nothing is forgotten, nothing's overlooked, and everything is missing. But when we come to ask Ribbono Shel Olam, we come down to Ribbono Shel Olam, we're better off as part of a group than as a yochid. And typically, you know, I think it's almost something we can understand on a simple level. If one person comes to a person of authority, I have a request, I think this is important, okay, I'll take it under advisement. When 100 people come and sign a petition, we are interested in this, they take it much more seriously. When a whole group is interested in something, this is not a special interest of one person, this is something that a lot of people are interested in, a lot of people need, they take it much more seriously. So when a group is mispiled to Ribbono Shel Olam, it makes a bigger difference than if an individual. And to the point that the Gemara makes this point by saying that there's a mila of davening in a big shul rather than a little shtibel. There's an inyan of roev hamadis melach davening in the bigger place. If there's a place with 10, 12 people and there's a place with 100 people, you better have davening in a place with 100 people. Now you might say, what difference do I make in 100 people? You know, by the 12 I make a big difference, by the 100 I don't. And maybe that's a legitimate point and maybe it's not, but the Gemara makes a point that there was a person who walked past the shuls that were smaller to go to the place that was bigger, and the Gemara says this was a proper mode of conduct because Berov Hamadis Melech. Now one could argue, okay, let's close all the little shuls, have one big shul, and it's not a crazy thing to say, because in the old days the shtetl only had one shul. There's no such thing as two shuls. There was one shul and everyone died on the same shul. And then when Nusach Sfarad became, I'm not going to say popular, it became popular later, but it became something to deal with. They started these small minyanim. It was a big rash. It was a tumult. What are you doing? You can make another minyan, a breakaway minyan. Besides the fact that the nusach was the question, why are you changing the nusach? But who ever heard of two shuls? The communities had one rav, had one shul. Now, there were big cities that had many shuls. There's no question about that. You know, Warsaw had hundreds of thousands of people. But I'm talking about the smaller communities. They weren't your choice of shuls. A city the size of Oak Park, Southfield, our neighborhood here, they wouldn't have 24 shuls to daven in. They would have one, maybe two. So it was a legitimate thing to have a roev hamadis melech. But we don't have kehillah anymore. We don't have that anymore. That's a thing of the past. And everyone wants to daven where they're comfortable davening. And if someone says something the wrong way to them, they're going to leave their shul, go to someplace else, and they got insulted, so that's the end. I'll go make my own shul, and whatever it is, and that's how you get 23 shuls in a small little neighborhood like ours. There is an Indian of the tzibur, the koyach of the tzibur, tefillah b'tzibur. As I'm saying, 10 is a tzibur, the bigger, there's more of a Madras Melech with a bigger group. So when we approach our Avodas Hashem and our mitzvahs, we got to do what we have to do, and some things we'll do individually. But if there's ever the opportunity to be part of a group, to get a group to do it, that's always better. It's always better when there's more. And sometimes people get insulted, like, in other words, this is my mitzvah, and you don't want other people to join you. That's the wrong way to look at it. You shouldn't be have a monopoly, so to speak, that you don't want other people to participate in a mitzvah. I'm not talking about financial and business. I'm not for mitzvahs. For mitzvahs, you should want as many people as possible to join you in your mitzvah, and you shouldn't feel that it's going to take away from my schar if someone else is participating in this mitzvah. The next thing, yes?
Going back to the Meister point, is there a general statement like, for where you should be the Meister? Like,
a simple breakdown?
Breakdown.
Well, you know there's Aniyat Yircha, and before that there's relatives, there's Kraven, and in the relatives we break down who are the closest relatives to the more distant relatives, and then there's your city, then there's your Shalayim, which is equal to your city, and then there's the broader United States, and then the Shaila is our yeshivas that have boys from our city considered our city, which could be it does, because boys from our city are learning in these big yeshivas that have boys from our cities. And then there are percentages where we will say that at least 50% of your tzedakah should stay local. And also there's the special area of giving tzedakah to moral obligations. Schools that you learned at, seminaries that you studied at, places that helped you personally that you have gotten a scholarship to, that you should feel a moral obligation to give back. So that's also moves things up on the list. But as the simple rule of thumb, beyond Krov, Mene, Yircha, like that, at least 50%. And I've told people they give checks, they go through their checkbook when it comes tax season, and they give TEP, and if the TEP sums are more than what they're giving locally, there's something wrong. They have got to give locally more than they give to all the other tzedakahs that come to their door.
But locally more than just like organizations? More
at
like
least 50% of your tzedakah dollars has to stay in the city. That's in the city. Matan Besesha is in the city. The schools are in the city. Matan Besesha is in the city. The mikvah is in the city. There's so many community things that people can give to. That's called in the city. Yes?
There's no such concept that somebody can take away schar from you. Like, meaning, I know somebody who did a program and, like, they wanted to do everything. They wanted to fund it. What's the word? Fund it. Whatever, they wanted to pay for all the costs, and it ended up being quite a lot of money, but they wanted to pay for all the costs, they wanted to pay for all the stuff, they wanted to do everything, bring everything, deliver everything, to, you know, so that it should be their mitzvah. Is there such a thing that it would have been fine to split the cost with somebody else? And they were like,
I believe we'll see from the Mishnah later that the person should feel open to get other people involved in his mitzvah. If he's doing a project or a program, and it's going to cost $10,000, and he wants to foot the bill himself. Maybe if he had other people, he could expand it three times that, and it would be a $30,000 program, $7,000 to $10,000. You don't realize the limitations you put on it, and for care, you get schar for getting other people involved. If you invite other people on board, then whatever they create is your mitzvah too, because you got them going.
So you don't lose, you gain.
You only gain. Because whatever you give to them to participate is attributed to you too. It's like if you have a factory, you're going to get much more profits than if you have the store just selling your own thing. Right? The more people working with you, the more you get. So in a Ruchnius level, you don't lose by getting other people involved in your mitzvah. And just the opposite. Sometimes people get so involved, it minimizes the scope of what could be accomplished, because only so much one person can do. And if you've got other people on board, you can maybe do so much more.
You know how people send gift calendars, magnets, all these different things. If you are benefiting from one of those things, do you have to give tzedakah?
If when you receive things in the mail that you do not ask for, lahalacha, you do not have to send the money. If you, in fact, enjoy it and benefit from it, you should give them something. You should give them something, but you don't have to give them something. You don't have to, but you should. And sometimes people just send it back. People send me books, return to sender. I don't need all these books. You know, I don't want them, I don't need them. So sometimes they just send it back. Yep.
First of all, does Eretz Yisrael have any category? Like, you're saying Yerushalayim has a certain standing. What about Bnei Brak? It's very, anywhere else in Eretz Yisrael. Do they have any more than anywhere else in the world?
I'm not sure that... Well, and the Eretz Yisrael, in general, beyond Yerushalayim, I think they're coming after Aniyah Yercha.
And Aniyah Yercha is equal to Yerushalayim?
Yeah.
So when you say 50%, it's 50% should go to Eretz Yisrael and, or your city
no.
together?
50% should stay in your city.
And then, so what does that mean that it's equal to your city?
You have responsibilities for the place you live. A person has to feel responsible for the place he lives.
So
it's like a moral obligation. It's a moral obligation. You live in the city. You have to help the city you live in.
So
who should help the city you live in, if not the people who live there? Think about it like that. You know, the community has many organizations that are worthwhile. They're worthy, and they don't have the money they need. So where's to go? They have to go to the community to support them. So there are you know, the problem is when you get mailings from other cities, for institutions in those cities that should be supported by those cities, and they're not. So they send out to us to help out. So it's not pasha, you know, we gotta help our own also.
But Yerushalayim is equal to your city?
Yes.
But it is equal or it's not?
I believe, I could double check in the Shulchan Aruch, but we give them a priority.
But it's not part of it.
But you still have to make sure you leave at least a center. That's what I've heard from our brain. The majority of the tzedakah stays here. And again, there's an exception to that too. Let's say you have to help a relative who doesn't live in your city. A relative will come ahead of your city.
So it's relative of your city.
A relative will come ahead of your city.
Uh-huh. What percentage do you give your relatives?
If they can't make it, you have to give them everything.
Yeah.
If they're drowning, they have no money, they come first. Mm-hmm. Relatives come before anybody else. Relatives come first.
If an institution knows that they can get enough money to cover their basic expenses from the community, but they want to get as much money as they can, not in a greedy way, but for other programs, are they allowed to send?
Let's put it this way. Most institutions don't cover their expenses. The question is, do they spend the money wisely? Are they investing in programs that they don't need to? Are there, that is a legitimate question that you have to ponder, and we don't always know what goes on behind the scenes. And sometimes I've questioned certain programs and I've been told that money is being financed by someone else independently. Let's say a yeshiva wants to build a gym. Some yeshivas don't want a gym, some yeshivas do want a gym. I should send my money to yeshiva to build a gym? I'm not spending money they should play basketball, I'm not spending money that they should learn. I'm not saying they shouldn't play basketball, that's a good thing to them, but why should I spend my money to that? They may say, "Sir, Mr. So-and-so said, I'm giving you money only for a gym. That's what I want the money to go for." So that's not what you're, when I send you my envelope, that's not for the gym. That was covered by so-and-so. And so we don't realize sometimes that these things are paid for by someone else. And also, when it comes to most of those big yeshivas and the like, they always say it's very easy to get someone to donate a Beis Medrash. Who's donating the kitchen? You know how many meals they make every day? Big yeshivas, like thousands? Who's paying for that? Someone's got to pay for that. But it's not a thing that people want to put their name on, the so-and-so kitchen. They'd love to see the name on a Beis Medrash. On a Mizrach Hall, on Aron Kodesh, it's much harder. But that's got to be covered. You got to feed the Bachar. You got to feed the people in there. So some things get more, you know, more press, or it's easier to raise money for. Other things are hard to raise money for. But some, you know, it's very difficult for us to judge from the outside. If someone has questions of program, they can always inquire from the directors of the school and see what kind of answer they get.
What about an individual in the city?
A what?
Mm-hmm.
When individuals need help, first of all, it's very hard to help them on your own. Very often they don't want to accept from someone else because they're embarrassed. but they will turn to organizations to provide assistance. And there are numerous organizations that people can access for help. So generally we say to give to the organizations and they will distribute it to the people who need it. But if there's someone who's willing to take and you have and they need, that's okay. As long as you know their needs are legitimate. You know, sometimes I question, you get things in the mail, like, who checked it out? Like, is it legitimate? Is it a real need or not? You know, sometimes you have to have oversight to make sure that the need is real. But when you know that the need is real and they're willing to accept help, you don't need to go through an organization if they're willing to take it. Because very often it's embarrassing. So like a shtickle matan b'seser, that they don't know who gave the money, they get through an organization that helps out. I know that schools, kollelim, will often get money to distribute as bonuses, if you want to call it that, to either rebbeim or to kollel fellows by Yom Tov. And that means there's an individual who'll come to the person in charge and say, "Listen, here's $10,000. I want this to go to these people," and they don't just not know who I am. So it's like a shtickle b'seser, and the person just gets in, you know, with his whatever, an ordinary stipend, he'll get all of a sudden a bonus that was not expected from a donor who wants to remain anonymous. And he may or may not even know who gets the money. He may specify to who to go to this person, he may not. But the recipient doesn't know. It's just a check from the Mossad, from the institution. And that's common. People will do that. And that's also a respectful way. You know, to a certain degree, you'd have to be a chacham how to do chesed, that you shouldn't make people feel bad. And one of the ways is this kind of thing. I know a person who was mortified. They were like in tears that one Friday they found a box of food by the door. Now, some people aren't mortified. They have nothing in the house, and they're so appreciative to receive such a box. But this person was totally so upset. So for such a person, that's not the way to help them. For that person, you're going to have to work on bonuses and other things. There are different ways to do it. You have to know. I think a lot of people would be very upset if they found by that door a box of chickens and grape juice. Other people who literally have nothing to sort of live on that, you know, on the Tamcha Shabbos kind of thing. So it all depends on who the person is and what the degree of need is and what's the best way to help them. So that's the only thing to be careful on a one-on-one, what's the best way to do that.
Yeah. Supporting your children, is that considered helping your family?
According to the Gemara, you help your children until they're 6 years old. Once they're six, they go out and get a job and support themselves. My feeling is that today that age has been moved up to graduating high school. My feeling is once a child graduates high school, even in the non-Jewish world, there are plenty who are self-sufficient. They get a job, they put themselves through school. They're old enough to be self-sufficient, and then any money parents give towards a child's education or upkeep after they are graduates of high school is tzedakah, pure charity. Now, there are some, I have seen some posts who want to say that we don't expect our girls to be self-sufficient until they get married, so until they get married, it's not a tzedakah case. And I disagree. As basically the question becomes, until six, it's not, there's no gray area. Either it's an obligation to support them, or it's tzedakah to support them. The Gemara says, till a child is sick, you're obligated to do it. And if it's an obligation, it can't be tzedakah. You don't use tzedakah to pay your obligations. So today, I would say it's an obligation until your kid finishes high school. Someone says, how long do I have to support my kids until they finish high school? And maybe you could use the non-Jewish equivalent. I think child support is till a child's 18. So maybe go by the age 18. Fine. You don't use high school graduation, go by 18. But after that, I'm not obligated. I don't see it as an obligation. Because I choose to have my daughter stay in my house until she gets married does not mean that it's an obligation upon me to do so. So a lot of people are giving a lot of talk without realizing it.
So let's say, so technically, like, I could get a job at Kmart and support myself and whatever. But I know that if I go to school...
Get roommates, rent the basement, exactly. Be
right,
on your
but
own.
But I know that if I go to school and if I live at home and have my parents support me until I can get my own job, a better job, I'll be better off in the long run. So
let's say my parents decide they don't want to give any other stuff I accept. Like, let's say their mice are covers supporting me. Mm-hmm. Are they not obligated in any other sucka because I'm family and I'm first?
Correct. Now, to temper that statement, you realize the Shulchan Aruch says a person should preferably give chomesh, just twice meiser. A family with a lot of kids probably does that easily without blinking by the time you pay tuition for kids in the yeshiva and seminary and everything else. But that is correct. And ultimately, if your person is going to look at it like that, they will have very little obligations beyond keeping their kids afloat. And again, that money should probably stay local to help the local mostos, even if it's a token to be part of the community. Part of the community have to give certain mostos in the community.
So this is on top of your miser money?
Like, I'm saying, let's say your miser money is exhausted by just taking care of your kids. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be giving tzedakah to help the local mostos at all. You have to still help the local places. You know,
but at bare minimum, meaning you could use your miser money to support your kids, and then according to obligation, you'd be...
Right. And listen, if a person can help their kids without miser, that's also wonderful. Because not everything has to come from miser if you don't have to, but in the straight halacha of it, any girl who's in school after high school, whether it's seminary or college, is an ani. Welcome to the world. That's your poor. And bachrim are the same thing. They're poor. They're aniyim. They're not working. They're aniyim. So helping them out or helping the schools that support, that's all tzedakah. This is all straight out tzedakah.
Isn't there a difference between ma'aser and tzedakah?
There's a difference between ma'aser and tzedakah in that not everyone is obligated in ma'aser, everyone is obligated in tzedakah. There is an obligation of ma'aser for those who can. Not everyone can give ma'aser. You can't give ma'aser, you don't give ma'aser. But everyone has to give tzedakah. Even the ani has to give tzedakah. Even though the ani may be exempt from ma'aser.
How
do you know if you're exempt from ma'aser? You can't pay your bills.
Okay, but how would you know?
If you can't pay your bills, you don't give ma'aser. You pay your bills first. And when I say bills, I don't mean your Macy's for clothes. I'm talking about basics. You can't pay your basic bills. You can't pay your rent. You can't pay your electric bill. You can't. If you can't pay the basics, you can't give ma'aser.
So is there an amount of tzedakah aspect?
And by the way, if you owe money, so a lot of people, what do they do if they can't pay their bills? They borrow. If you owe money, you can't give ma'aser either. You gotta pay your debts back first. You have no right giving ma'aser money to wonderful institutions until you pay back your debts. You owe people money. So someone says to you, well, you buy a house, you'll owe money for the rest of your life with a mortgage. I don't mean that. I'm talking about personal loans beyond the mortgage or beyond the car loan, which is almost like considered normal living, and probably beyond student loans if you're in a program that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's, you gotta take care of that. That will exempt you from tzedakah. But if a person has personal loans out, people lent them money, you gotta pay them back before you buy $100 raffle tickets and take the $180 dinner tickets. You could help these moises with $18 here and there, but you gotta pay your debts back. Your chayyus have got to come first. So not everyone give ma'aser. The money has to go to that first.
There's no difference between supporting the sons who are learning Torah and supporting the daughters in college?
If your daughter is going to college and her goal is to help support her family, what's wrong with that?
I'm just asking if there's a difference.
There's a mile to support a poor Talmud Chacham. So a boy in the shiva is a poor Talmud Chacham. Okay, yeah, there's a maila. There's a maila of supporting poor Talmud Chacham. There is. But if you don't help out your girls, we don't want a situation where the girls go off the derech either. You know, this is a significant issue. You got to keep your girls in Beis Yaakov. You got to keep them in the right environment. So you got to do that too. That's also very important. It's very difficult. Yes, Talmud Chacham come ahead. But it's not like that means you're off the hook with your daughters. You got to take care of them too. I'll just add one more thing I heard. I went to New York to hear drasha or a seminar or whatever it was on chinuch, and the speakers were Rav Pam Olav Shalom and Baruch Chaim Tov Mishmol Kamenetsky. And Rav Pam said, if a person has children in school in yeshivas and they receive a tuition scholarship because they cannot afford full tuition, they are obligated to give to those schools their Meiser money before anywhere else until they have paid their tuition in full. Because people have 4 or 5 kids in school, let's say, and it should cost them, let's say, $25,000. By the way, that's a low number. It's really, today, it's like $40,000, whatever it is. But let's say it's $25,000 tuition. And they can't afford $25,000. They can afford $6,000. And the school says, fine, that's what you could have paid. So pay $6,000. We'll take what you can pay. We'll educate your kids for $6,000. And all of a sudden, they're giving money to this place and that place, the other place. What are you doing? What are you giving all this money to all these places? Give back to the school that's educating your kids. And that's the first place for your Meiser money to go if you receive a scholarship. If you receive a scholarship, you give back to the school that you get the scholarship from. It's like, it's almost like so obvious, but a lot of people don't get it.
Can you give back in tuition? Meaning like, if you're getting a scholarship, $6,000 instead, could you give more in the next year, pay $8,000 because you have $2,000 from Meiser money? Whatever, I'm not, okay, I don't know, you probably can't.
Or the next year tuition will be $8,000 instead of $6,000?
No, I'm just saying, let's
people would rather say, let my tuition be $2,000, I'll give you $6,000 Meiser today.
No, but that's what I'm saying, like, let's say you pay your tuition in
so let's go
not ahead. In full at the beginning of the year, you pay it throughout the year, can you add Meiser money to each one, so instead you agreed on $6,000, but at the end of the year you end up paying $8,000 because you gave more of your Meiser money, you could do that?
Let's rephrase what you're saying. Can I use Meiser money to pay tuition? The answer is yes. You can use Meiser money to pay tuition. And that puts everyone over the top of Meiser and Chomish and everything else. You're allowed to use Meiser money to pay tuition. Mar Shiva was very strong about this. I know there are some opinions that say differently. And he felt very strongly that you can use Meiser money for tuition for boys and for girls. And for girls, like this for sure, that should be more universally embraced, and even for boys he held, even in elementary school, which is still a chiddush, but he held that too. And I tell this to people all the time, you're allowed to use Meiser money for tuition. So again, how much Meiser you'll have in the end is going to end up being minimal if you are supporting your kids in the yeshivas that we have today.
Is Meiser part of tzedakah? Like, are you covered tzedakah wise if you give Meiser, or are you supposed to give more than just?
If you give Meiser, odds are you'll also give tzedakah independent. As it means, it keeping track of every penny you give. So you could do the Meiser by calculation and tzedakah without cheshbon. You could do that too. But a person could give Meiser exclusively, if that's what you're asking. That does cover Meiser. Yeah.
So that count as giving a few,
coins
every day to your local,
you know,
school
to
talk about?
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah.
Just a halacha question. If I get $50 as a present from someone, not for working, but for a birthday or whatever, do I have to pay Meiser on that?
Sure. We give Meiser on any money we're given for discretionary spending. It gets complicated when a person lives in New York and the parents send them money to support them, but the grandmother decides to send instead, and the parents are relying on that. So is that like discretionary money, or is that support money that you do or don't give Meiser? That gets, these are good childless that girls have asked me over the years. But as a basic rule, when you have money as a present that you're given, Hanukkah money, birthday money, to spend at your discretion, that should be, Meiser should be taken from that.
What about bonds or investments?
Investments you give Meiser on when you cash them out. I let them mature, and then eventually when you take that money out, you'll give Meiser. So it's a very easy system. Whenever you get the money to spend, give Meiser that instead of on the theoretical. Because it's very difficult if you have money in a mutual fund to figure out what your Meiser obligation is, and it's constantly going up and down. So rather, when you cash it out, that's when you do it to Meiser.